Listening Dog Media.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The Athletic.
Hello there, this is The Offside Rule and Kate Borsay with you. Today we're going to look ahead to the 22nd edition of the World Cup, which starts on Sunday. Coming up later, we'll be speaking to Australian broadcaster Adrian Arciulli to find out how he's feeling about this hugely controversial tournament. He's actually at the airport about to leave for Qatar, so it's incredibly topical for him. It's actually the second time that he's visited the country to cover a big tournament as well. So we'll find out whether he's looking forward to it. Is he concerned about covering it in any way, and have a big old chat about really some of the controversy off the pitch, really, that's affected this World Cup. Plenty of conversations to be had there. Let's introduce my, well, I feel like saying first special guest, but she's my pal, really, the brilliant broadcaster.
Work wife.
The brilliant broadcaster working for the Premier League and far, far beyond Sky Sports, etc., etc. It is Lindsay Hooper. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm finally getting a little more geared up for the World Cup because I know we've had a chat and we just weren't feeling the excitement. I think that's partly down to the obvious, but also the positioning of the World Cup in the season, because we've just had a round of Premier League matches. And until that all finished, I don't think I could fully get on board. But I'm getting there now. I've got the magazines and all my paraphernalia.
Yes, that Lindsay goes out and buys all the mags. I normally do a big scour online and take in some previews and get excited that way. But you're right, Hoops. Now we've finally got no other football to talk about. The focus has to turn to the World Cup and Cristiano Ronaldo. Of course, that is pretty much the only big football conversation that's been going on this week. We'll talk more about that in just a second, but I want to find out what you've been up to. You sent me a very excited message last week saying, Steve Cotterill says I should be a scout. Perhaps this is you thinking about your journalism retirement, Lindsay. This is what most footballers do, of course. They can sometimes carve out a living as a scout. Where did this come from? How did this come about?
It came in a post-match interview. I was covering Shrewsbury against Oxford for Soccer Special last week. And I just noticed that the set piece taker, Tom Bayliss, so shout out to Tom Bayliss from Shrewsbury, he was fantastic. So every single corner kick cleared the first man. Not only did it clear the first man, because that's a real big grumble of mine, especially when you go further down the leagues, you see some atrocious set pieces. But not only did they clear the first man, they were in the right area every single time. And he took a few free kicks, mainly corners. So my final question, I just said, you know, you must be delighted with how well Tom Bayliss is performing when he's taking set pieces, because everyone seems to be on the money. And he just stood back for a moment, digested, and went, you should be a scout. Yes, you're right. He didn't miss one, did he? They were all very good deliveries. And I was like, yes. So it made me think, oh, at least I've noticed something. At least there's something that I can connect with. Because otherwise they were just having a bit of beef with each other. It was a one-all draw and him and Carl Robinson were both saying that the other had got it wrong, you know. So there you go.
And I think that you can genuinely say that you managed that rare quality of asking a question that wasn't expected in a post-match interview, because it is hard. There are certain questions you have to ask because the broadcasters require it of you. But the fact that you snuck in a little surprise there, Lindsay, gives you 10 out of 10 from me as well.
It also means I might have an avenue.
A job, yeah. You need to get the CV off to Steve Cotterill, don't you, really? I know you've been hosting a big Premier League coaching summit as well. I know Hayley's been doing a little bit of these, but for another organisation. But tell me who was involved in yours and whether you sort of came away, as you often do with these events, with some new nugget of information, some new bit of wisdom.
Hayley does much more of these events and hosting than I do, but I love doing a spate of them. It's usually around this time of the year and just after Christmas into February. And yeah, the Premier League Coaching Summit is for all coaching personnel, not just coaches, it's analysts, any of the behind the scenes teams at Premier League clubs. They all get in one room, share ideas and connect. And it was our very first face-to-face event at the Landmark Hotel. And the criteria was to try and just get people thinking in different ways about coaching, about how you deal with a modern day footballer, about the future of the game as well and where it's going to be. There were some really interesting takeaways because as well as having speakers that were from inside the football world, you've got people from outside the football world but within sport, but you'd also got people from outside sport completely. And as we know, sports learn from each other. Mm. So we had Harlequins there and rugby were sharing their ideas and the way that Harlequins turned their season around. They had half a campaign where they went on and won that title a couple of years ago. So they were talking about being player led. That was really interesting. I also went into these breakout sessions and I decided to go to one where there was an orthopedic surgeon who works for Air Ambulance, Ash Vasireddy. He was fascinating because he's talking about high performance environments, being under pressure, making those choices when you have very little time to consider the repercussions. So you've just got to go with instinct on some of those, of course. But you learn from different people, different skills. So I think there were lots to take away. We rounded off the whole thing by having a panel that included Liam Rossignol, who's the current Hull City manager, Yaya Toure, who's now under 16 coach at Spurs, and referee Darren England. So we got the referees perspective as well and the future of the game and where it's heading. And it was fascinating.
You also covered a couple of games on Saturday, two games in one day. So it was like a mega shift on Saturday for you as you make full use of your petrol tank. You went to West Brom.
That was my pre-World Cup sign-off.
Yes, well, yeah, that's it. Going out with a flourish. Absolutely caning it all over the place. So you saw a brilliant goal at West Brom.
Yeah, so I think we need to remind everyone that I'm a Wolves fan. So going to West Brom is interesting.
It was a doubly bad day on that.
It was a doubly bad day. I mean, I found it fine because West Brom hadn't been doing well. They've obviously brought in a new manager in Carlos. And I just thought, okay, they're having that new manager bounce, that's fine, it's not like they're about to get promoted. So I went there fully open to whatever I was about to see. What I didn't expect to see was Thomas Asante score a bicycle kick. The finish was fantastic. So when they come to me live on Soccer Saturday, of course had to give it the big build-up that it deserved. And I definitely waxed lyrical about it. So I thought, right, as I was leaving the Hawthorns, you know, they've won 2-0. So
against
well
Stoke
done.
City, yeah, all
yeah,
good.
They beat
well
Stoke
done to
City.
Them, fair enough.
I'm now off to Wolves to see them play Arsenal. And I was thinking the day can get better if we could just scrape something, you know, a draw. We were denied a penalty, Kate. We should have had a penalty. And yeah, they went to town on it in the halfway talk in the studio on Sky Sports.
Is that a good move on from our last episode about VAR?
Yeah, I think we'll skip over it, Kate. Okay. But so, my mum predicted 2-0 Arsenal. She predicted that. And that means they're top for Christmas, doesn't it? Top of the Premier League for Christmas. A little bit lazy of us to say that, given that it it's obviously November, but it's true. It's factual.
Yeah. A brace from Odegaard too, who my son's a big football fan, loves Liverpool. But one of his other football fascinations, same as his mates, actually, is Martin Odegaard. He's just one of those players that seems to capture young fandom. He certainly does. So there we go. Arsenal top at Christmas. Well done to them. For the other Premier League sides, as quite a bit of regrouping that needs to be done during this period. You just wonder what's going on behind the scenes at Manchester United at the moment, Lindsay. Pure rage would be one of the emotions that I'd guess at. Cristiano Ronaldo's intervention, I'm going to call it, this big interview that he's done with Talk TV's Piers Morgan. It's basically so huge, it's being broadcast over two nights. We're recording this on Wednesday. We've not seen the full thing yet, but it feels like we've seen more than enough clips to know what it's going to be about. He is disheartened, disillusioned, critical of the club, say the coaches don't back him. He's criticised Erik ten Hag's, criticised the coaching there, some of the leadership there as well. He's not a happy boy, Cristiano Ronaldo. What do you think of the look of this, Lindsay? From a football journalist's point of view, what do you make of the fact that he's decided to use this international break to basically make sure he never plays for Manchester United again?
Well, from a journalist's point of view, I think the first thing I'm wondering, and I do know that other people ask this, including very well done to Laura Woods for asking this question on TalkSport, which is, when was the interview done? When did it happen? Because it's one thing, we know how TV works. We know
I think it happened at the
released.
End of last week, didn't it?
I don't know. Is that what the answer was?
I think it was, well, I suppose United still had a game at the weekend, didn't they? But as I understand it, it happened very recently.
See, with that in mind, the timing isn't brilliant partway through a season, of course. We already knew that Cristiano Ronaldo wasn't happy. It didn't take a body language expert to tell us that, did it? I think we all know that from the naked eye of watching recent games.
Well, he refused to come on as a substitute, didn't he, against Tottenham? So he's already, you know, clearly not a happy bunny.
Yeah, and we've all had our own speculation about that, the fact that he was called upon so late and that he would have found that disrespectful. He also said, you know, my side will come out. Clearly, this is what he was hinting at, because his whole side has come out in a 1 hour, warts and all exposed interview, sit down with Piers Morgan. But what it's done is it's caused fraction. We've already seen the clips of him arriving at the Portugal camp for the World Cup. Bruno Fernandes, there's a frosty atmosphere there as he enters in and probably sees, I imagine that's the first time he sees Ronaldo post the revelations of that interview. So if it's causing that sort of fraction within his national team as well as Manchester United, it's just not a good look. It's just not a good look, full stop anyway.
No.
Amazing as Ronaldo has been, it's always been about him.
Anyway, look, trust Cristiano Ronaldo to drop that one as international break starts, because, you know, it's very well timed, isn't it? We're yet to see kickoff at the World Cup. That happens at the weekend on Sunday. And he's got filled this lovely pocket of time that we've got, where maybe we should be getting excited about the World Cup. And instead, we're talking about him and controversy instead. Quick one from me. And I was going to be speaking to our Australian SBS journalist later on, who's about to leave Australia for Qatar. And we're going to be speaking to Adrian Archuli about working at the tournament. But this week I've been speaking to some journalists. Well, one journalist who's already been out to Qatar, actually. There's a publication called Yossimar Football. It's a European kind of website and magazine. And they would usually at this time of year, Lindsay, be publishing their World Cup preview edition with, you know, breakdown of all the groups, etc. Instead, they have decided to boycott the football, having sent five journalists out to Qatar to try and speak to migrant workers to find out what it's like over there. Such were the stories through this whole edition. Instead of talking about a country in each group, they talk about a migrant worker. And so each country becomes a migrant worker. And there are some absolutely shocking stories that they've exposed. There's no football in it at all. This is their way of saying that we are not aligned with this at all. In fact, they say, basically, they sort of round it all off, saying that with FIFA at the wheel, football is steered towards a head-on collision with its most important value, fair play. And their argument is that for those workers, not necessarily working at World Cup stadiums, but working on the infrastructure that's going to support the tournament beyond the actual venues, that many of them have suffered life-changing injuries. They've had their passports taken off them. You know, workers from some countries involved in the World Cup, actually, who've had to pay to get over to Qatar in the first place to get a work permit or to get sponsorship, and have been, you know, left in debt
to sort of loan sharks, essentially, because they've lost their jobs. They've become unemployed as costs have spiraled. So yeah, shout out to Josimar Football. You can head over to their website. It's Josimar, who've, you know, really, really decided to have their say and make their mark in protest against this World Cup.
Also, when it comes to freedom of speech for the media when they're out there, have you seen that clip already of the Danish TV reporter and some Qataris come over and try and confiscate the camera whilst he's live on air? And he's pointing out that he's got a pass to broadcast for the World Cup and he's just in front of the sign. If that is a start of things to come as well, I just wonder what this next month is going to look like.
Yeah, and you know, personally, I think you'll always get instances like that at the beginning of tournaments. I think quickly the authorities there will stamp down on that sort of behaviour, because that is not how you want to start a World Cup. And they, you know, still want to give the impression that they welcome everyone to this tournament. And, you know, that includes all different fans, whether they're part of the LGBT community, whether they are whichever country they support. And that also includes, you know, a certain amount of freedom of speech to journalists as well. But look, without further ado, just a quick reminder that you can subscribe on your favourite podcasting app to The Offside Rule. You can follow us on Twitter at Offside Rule Pod, and you can check out our website as well. There are some World Cup previews going up very soon, offsiderulepodcast.com. So nearly 14 years after the bidding process began in January 2009, the Qatar World Cup is upon us, kicking off this Sunday with the hosts taking on Ecuador. In this show, we want to evaluate how we're feeling about this, well, hugely controversial tournament, with much of the build-up dominated by talk of the country's horrendous human rights record, their laws that mean that homosexuality is basically illegal in the country, and the fact that nearly 7,000 migrant workers have reportedly lost their lives building the World Cup stadium. So how are we supposed to feel about this tournament? Do we even know how we feel about it? Today, we'll break down some key facts. And we'll also, in a little while, speak to a journalist who's arriving in Qatar in just a few hours' time to cover the competition. Linz, I just wonder on your thoughts, first of all. We know, of course, the issue surrounding people within the LGBTQ plus community in the country, a horrible human rights record, as we've just mentioned, people, several migrant workers injured in making the stadiums, all of that, a questionable award process. You know, was the World Cup awarded to Qatar as a result of corruption and bribery? Probably yes, when you look at it all the evidence stacked up. But is now the time to turn our attention to the football? How do we marry all of the controversy and rightly some of the consternation about the World Cup being in Qatar with the fact that we still have a major football tournament here?
We have to be aware. We have to be educated on what's gone on. There's certainly a brilliant documentary looking at the events leading up to the Qatar World Cup. So I would really encourage anyone to watch the Netflix documentary. It's very easy to find. You need to be across all of that process, all of the build-up, all of the impact that it's had on the migrant workers, on those that live there. There is insight that I'm sure you will learn things that you haven't read anywhere else. And there has been a lot of coverage on the topic. So you have to be aware. I also think, though, that the book in a way stopped with the governance of the sport, and those decision makers decided where it would be. We weren't ecstatic about the fact that it was in Russia, but Russia at least was a footballing nation and they ended up hosting a fantastic World Cup. This one feels more of a bitter pill to swallow because it's not a footballing nation. It's actually bent the rules in order to be able to have it. So we've had to move the time of year. They've had to build lots of stadia all within a very small radius. I also think that has security concerns linked with it because it's just too small to hold a World Cup. We've had Sepp Blatter come out since and admit the same, that it shouldn't have gone there, even though he was right at the centre of the process of approving
He wasn't talking about the corruption attached to it, by the way. He was just talking about the fact that Qatar is too small a country.
Too small, yeah.
And too warm a country. Hence, it's the first ever Winter World Cup that we've got. If you were asked to go, and we know journalists going, would you have agreed to go? And how would you have, I suppose, reasoned with that in your mind? There's no criticism from me for any journalists going, they're just doing their job. But what would have been your thought process if you were asked to go and cover it in person?
Well, I'm really pleased that I haven't had to choose, Kate, because my contract at Sky means that there's no way that I would be able to go out there, because there's also WSL games still going on, EFL games, which I have to cover for Soccer Saturday, and I'm contracted to do those tasks. So it took the decision out of my hands. But what I would say is that I am a football journalist. In fact, I don't really cover very many other sports now at all, just football. A World Cup comes around once every 4 years, and I feel that all of my colleagues that have been asked to go and work out there, you know, they're football journalists. They've taken a job to work on football. Mm. That is not their responsibility to choose where it goes. Yes, they need to highlight the issues out there. And I have absolute faith in everyone that's going out there will make sure that people are aware of issues. In fact, they will shine more of a light on it by being there than not being there. But we've got to remove this responsibility away from the players, from managers, from coaching staff, from football clubs, from journalists, because they're not responsible. They weren't the people that chose it. The people that chose it were either lining their pockets or they were doing it for other reasons. I am convinced of that. So I think you have to acknowledge that once it's there, it's there. There's a World Cup happening. It's going to happen with or without us. And I'm sure that's how everyone feels. I spoke at the very beginning of this show about how I'm suddenly starting to get a bit more build up and excitement for it. It won't be on a par. You know, the thing is, everything that's gone into this World Cup and the reasons why people disagree with it will remain in history forever. It won't be remembered as one of the best World Cups ever. And I'd say that even as an England fan, even if England went on and won it, we are not going to remember it in the way that we remembered 66.
That's interesting.
So I think it's already tainted, and we all recognise that, whether we're out there or whether we're at home covering it or we're just at home watching and enjoying it. We all recognise that. But I think it's important not to forget the sacrifices that many people have made for this World Cup to happen. And I think the migrant stories in particular are the ones that really hit home.
Well, Linz, fortunately, we don't have to imagine what we would say if we were offered a gig at the World Cup. We can speak to someone now who's actually on his way to the World Cup as we speak from the airport. So the connection's a little bit patchy, but hopefully our listeners will bear with us. Adrian Artuli is from SBS Sport, which is an Australian public service broadcaster. And he's about to go out as a journalist reporter for SBS to Qatar. Greetings, Adrian. Are you with us?
Yes, how are you, Kate and Lizzie? Pleasure. Thank you so much for having us on. And looking forward to getting back over there. Obviously, any chance to cover the World Cup, this will be my first World Cup on the ground. So yeah, it's kind of a dream come true. So really looking forward to getting over.
Yeah, we've just been talking actually about whether there was any debate and would be any debate for us as journalists about whether we went to cover the World Cup. There's been plenty of, and you know, rightly, plenty of discussion about matters off the pitch and the controversy, you know, surrounding human rights issues in Qatar, the awarding of the World Cup there in the first place, and, you know, many other big talking points. Did you have any of those conversations with yourself, Adrian, any of those debates yourself about covering it?
Well, so I'll go back. So basically, I went over there in June to cover the Socceroos qualifiers. So obviously the Socceroos had to go the long way to get to the World Cup. They had to play a third place playoff against the United Arab Emirates and then play Peru in the Intercontinental playoff. And those games were played over the space of 2 weeks in June. So I took it as an opportunity when I went over there to also cover the Socceroos, but also look at the issues surrounding the World Cup. So I was able to speak to the Supreme Committee representatives about the different issues in terms of the workers' rights, the issues regarding, you know, migrant workers' deaths, LGBTQ plus rights, all those sorts of things. And I'm a big believer in, you know, it's important that you find these things out and try and find it out firsthand. So it was a great opportunity to go over there and to do those stories and to get the perspective from on the ground. And so I came, once I got back from covering the Socceroos games, I was able to turn those stories around and also spoke to Amnesty. And I felt it was really good because I was able to do a well-balanced stories. It's a tournament like no other in that sense, that there's so many side issues to the actual sport. Journalism is all about balance and presenting sides of the story. So I think, yeah, it's obviously exciting to be going back over there, but there's obviously a lot of issues that need to be addressed. And I think most of the world media is doing that.
So you basically put out content around some of these more controversial elements of the World Cup that you've put out already. Will you continue with that content? So when you actually get to Qatar in a few hours' time, will you be purely football focused and sort of draw the line on all the other noise? Or will you, have you decided to continue the reporting of the more controversial aspects of it?
Okay, so just to for some background on how SBS works is, so we are the rights holders in Australia. So we are showing all 64 matches on free-to-air television in Australia. So it's a great opportunity for all Australians. So our coverage is very multi-layered. So we have our chief international correspondent over there as well for SBS News. And we also have a team working with the broadcast as well. So my role in particular will be covering the Socceroos as well as the other matches. So obviously, recently the Socceroos put out the statement on human rights, and they were the first nation to do so, and that received a lot of attention in Australia because everyone was asking for a long time, what will Australia do? How will they address the issue? Because Australians like to, I think, see their national team stand for something and speak up. And obviously Jackson Irvine, who you've seen featured prominently in campaigns for either FIFA Pro or whether it be the Socceroos video, they've taken on amazing leadership. And I think for myself, there will be, when the Socceroos games are on, definitely, I think there will be, obviously, it'll have to be touched on because they've obviously made this statement. Will they continue? But for myself personally, we still will be covering it, but myself personally, my role will be a bit different because we are working on so many different games. So it all depends on what the situation is, if you get me. It's fair to say the issues will be addressed. We also have Craig Foster, who is one of the, you know, the world's leading human rights advocates on our coverage, as a focal point of our coverage as well. So Craig will also, you know, speak on these issues as well throughout the tournament. And we admire his work. He's got a powerful voice, and Craig is an important figure in the world when it comes to human rights.
Because you were there in June, I'm wondering what your expectations are going back now, because obviously quite a few months have passed, but how ready did you feel that Qatar was for the World Cup back then? And, you know, your takeaways, the major issues maybe that you felt were going to be facing them as hosts.
I think the biggest thing that I'll be interested to see when I get there is how they deal with the influx of people. To give people context, it's, you know, from an Australian perspective, the country is actually smaller than the size of Greater Sydney. And Greater Sydney has a population of 8 million people. And it's, so Qatar is 2.5 million. It's just crazy. It's like having the World Cup in Sydney, as I've said to people back in Australia. It is, everything is so close together. When the Socceroos were playing in June, they were playing at a stadium called Ahmed Bin Ali, and that was only half an hour. But that would have, if that was in Sydney, that would feel like an hour and a half because of all the traffic you would encounter, like on a Sydney road. Sydney traffic is not the greatest, so you would experience a lot of that. But there wasn't any traffic at the time, so I'm really interested to see how it handles the influx of people, how it handles the traffic, but also just the metro, all those sorts of things. There's a lot of infrastructure that's being put in place, so I'm really interested to see how it handles the sheer volume of people, because it's never seen anything like it before.
I suppose with that in mind, the follow-up is, you know, are you concerned for the safety of people at this World Cup? You know, when you point out about the stadiums, the infrastructure, the lack of distance between them, literally 90 miles separates the most northern and southern stadiums. They were originally meant to have 12 as part of the bid, but the money being spent was far exceeding that. And in the end, FIFA relented and said they could have 8 stadiums. 4 are in Doha, as you say. And then we've got the suburbs. Is that a security risk for everybody out there? Is that something as a broadcaster and certainly as a network that you've had to take into consideration?
Okay, from my previous experience, and obviously it was only 2 weeks, but I feel as if from my experiences with the Qatari authorities when I was over there, the level of due diligence, and they will be running this to the T. They will be making sure nothing goes wrong. The amount of you know, whether it be police they will bring in from different countries, from what I understand, from countries like Jordan and Turkey, to make sure this runs smoothly. We obviously see when the England game is going to be played, police officers will be coming in. I don't doubt that this will be very heavily controlled, in the sense that they'll make sure nothing goes wrong. They will be... That's just from my previous experience, having been there and having seen, we needed, for example, when we were there, we needed filming permits to basically film anywhere. We needed to produce our filming permits when we were filming at the Corniche, where the flags are raised. We needed to, anytime security approached us, which was quite often, we would get, and they would ask us, because it's different to whether it be the UK or Australia, where you can't just take a camera out on the street if you're a news crew and just shoot anything. You have to... It's just different. It's a different culture. So we needed our filming permits at all times, and we presented it, and there were no issues. There will be a sense that they don't want anything to go wrong, and they will be doing everything they can. So I'm quite confident that there will be a lot of things they put in place to ensure that everything goes smoothly.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be a lot of focus on that. On, you know, outwardly it seeming like there's no issue here, as it were. Should we talk a little bit about the Socceroos, as we're with you, and as, of course, they will be some of your focus. And as we sort of divert our conversation a little bit to the football, of course, as part of this build-up, how do you see Australia doing? They're in Group D, aren't they, with France, Denmark and Tunisia. A tough group, really, for them, this one.
Yeah, well, it feels a lot like 2018 with... Australia in the same group as France and Denmark once again, and the only difference is Peru isn't in the group this time. Well, they obviously beat Peru to make the World Cup, and Tunisia is their second opponent. I think there's a sense of, in Australia, whatever, they're just happy to be there, and however they go, considering the way Australia got to the World Cup, having to go through the playoffs, no one really gave them a chance of getting through those two qualifiers, especially the one against Peru. And they got through. So credit to them. There was obviously Australia won 11 games in a row and then basically hit a wall. And it was an amazing campaign for them because of Australia's border policies throughout the COVID pandemic. They barely played at home. So Qatar is like a second home to Australia because that was their base camp for a majority of the qualification campaign. So Australia has played in these stadiums several times. They've actually played, they play all three games at Al Janoub Stadium, which is where they've already played a game, and they've played five games in Qatar in the past year and won all five. So they understand the surrounds, they understand the climate, which I think will actually have a huge difference. And having, as I said, been there, obviously the temperature when in June was, the hottest day was 51 degrees Celsius. The average temperature was in the early 40s, so you're talking 41 to 45 was the rough temperature each day. When we get there, it's only going to be in the high 20s, early 30s. Still, that's quite warm. Now, for Australia, they will, I think, see that as an advantage because the way the tournament's set up, teams will be have only just got in a few days ago. The first game, there's no games before. They will think, be confident that they can get a result, especially against France in that first game, which sets up Tunisia from the Tunisia game for a massive game. Now, the thing about Graham Arnold is he motivates his players like you wouldn't believe. He's got plenty of catchphrases, e.g. in June it was, you know, the players have got Aussie DNA, whatever that is, we don't know. And this time he's telling them to fight like 11 boxing kangaroos. Admittedly, exactly. So there is a lot of the Aussie, you know, there's a lot of Aussie sayings flying around, but basically, you know, who knows, they could deliver a knockout blow. I know that's a terrible joke, but basically, yeah, he's got all these different sayings and stuff, but he's a very much a motivator as a coach. Tactically, he's not very deep in the sense that, you know, there is a certain way he plays and he's had a lot of success with that, but his main strength as a coach is getting players to give it all on the pitch, win those one-on-one battles, win those physical battles, and really, really, you know, show that Aussie fighting spirit, which Australians are, you know, known for. So there is a level of confidence that given the nature of this World Cup, that Australia can cause a few upsets, and it's obviously been a long time since Australia reached the knockout stage going back to 06. So yeah, it'd be really interesting to see how they go. Obviously, they don't have the players of the past playing in the big leagues like we once did. A lot of our players are actually not playing regularly. So yeah, it'd be really interesting to see.
Player-wise, though, Newcastle fans have a vested interest in an 18-year-old that you've got, who's joining Newcastle in January. Let's feel for Garang Kuol, who's going to get used to playing in 30-plus degrees and then move to Tyneside in January. Is he your player to watch? And who are the other ones that we should keep an eye out for?
Yeah, Garang Kuol, keep an eye out for him, because this kid is, he is the future of Australian football. And he has barely, this is his, how crazy his rise to the top is. He's barely played in the A-League, the professional competition here for the Central Coast Mariners. And he's got to move to Newcastle United, which is obviously a dream move. But this kid has so much talent, and everyone's in Australia is gunning for him, because we really haven't had those type of players for a long time. In the last World Cup, there was a player called Daniel Arzani, who sadly went on to play, earned a move from Melbourne City to Manchester City. Obviously, Melbourne City is a part of the City Football Group. Unfortunately, he got hurt playing for Celtic and really hasn't rediscovered that. So all hopes now are on Garang. And he is a great, he's got plenty of speed to burn. He's only 18, but also a great reflection of Australian society. You know, a refugee, a great story, and what Australia's really become about as a multicultural country. Always has been, but a real reflection of modern day Australia and what Australia stands for.
Well, look, I'm excited by him too. I was watching some clips last night and couldn't believe how good he was on the ball and how quick as well. He just bursts through, doesn't he, leaving defenders on the floor. So looking forward to seeing him, and also how the Socceroos get on as well. Good luck to Australia. Good luck to you as well, Adrian, as you cover the FIFA World Cup in Qatar. You'll be there in a few hours' time, currently at the airport. Thanks so much for sparing the time for us. That's Adrian Archili, who is from SBS Sport. Cheers, Adrian.
Thanks, Kate. Thanks, Lindsay.
Thanks, Adrian.
Really, thanks so much. Really, really appreciate it.
Like a bit of World Cup chatter between us now, Hoops. Let's talk about Group B, England, Iran, the United States and Wales. England really need to top this group, don't they? They've had such patchy form going into this tournament. So many debates about the playing personnel, about who's strongest where. We need a settled 11, don't we, England? And for me, no other option than to top the group. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the group won't be as problematic. I know that it's not going to be a stroll in the park. We know that USA have improved greatly. We know that Iran can really offer a threat. They're certainly a team that have an unpredictable quality to them. And then Wales, who we should never write off. The fact that they're there and some of their key players are now older is something to bear in mind. But what they lack, perhaps an individual talent, sometimes they make up for in the collective, don't they?
Yeah, well, look, a lot of their success is determined by Gareth Bale. Mm. But we saw what happened at Euro 2016 when they made the semis. Just how far sometimes, if they're on the crest of the wave, they can achieve. When we talk about overall tournament favourites, you know, for me, it's so hard to look past Brazil.
Yeah, I do think one of the South American nations will go very far, purely for the fact that they're used to the heat. And that was something that Adrian was telling us about with Australia. Now, I don't think Australia are going to go deep into the tournament, unfortunately for him, although I really hope he enjoys his trip. But I do think that when you look at Argentina and Brazil, you have to start thinking, because of the temperatures and also because of the players that they've got at their disposal, that they have the know-how to work their way through this tournament in a really economical way. Because I think that's the problem with European teams. Maybe we won't be economical enough. And what I mean is conserving different energies and conserving different tactics for different games. So, so it will be interesting to see who gets where. I am a big believer, though, Kate, in the collective. And I look up and down the groups and who maybe finishes top in the groups and second and goes through. And I have to say that I'm attracted to Denmark for this one. We know what happened in terms of when Christian Eriksen collapsed at the last Euro. It galvanized that team and brought them together. And I think they've only got more solid as a result of it. And I just think when you look at team, they just play for each other and they would run through brick walls for each other.
Yeah, they've got better rounded players, haven't they, as well? You know, Eriksen will be there, but Holberg as well, you know, really, really talented players who are making a difference in their own leagues. I think they sort of feel like although they've always been a contender to some extent, I feel like they are a much more mature team and they've been through the mill together, as you say.
Remember, a lot of the Danish players have gone out to top leagues now. So we've seen many more play in the Premier League. You know, Thomas Frank's managing quite a few of them at Brentford. So I think they are used to playing a different level of football as well, a lot of that first team. So they would be one of the teams for me to watch that could potentially get to the semis. Certainly, I think they're quarterfinalists for sure. England, I don't know about you, Kate. I'm not feeling as optimistic as the last two tournaments.
No, I think it's just all so uncertain for England, isn't it? As I say, not having a settled team, a debate about the formation. Look, I think Jordan Pickford's assured in goal. I think Harry Kane's assured up front. Maybe you can pick out a couple of the midfielders as well who are pretty nailed on. But it just feels like with such a bad run in the Nations League and with some pretty bad results recently, we just don't know what we're getting. And I think we're doing a great job of underplaying and not getting too excited about England, which is probably where we should be, despite the fact that this should be the tournament, you know, all eyes on building from the success of Euro 2020. This should have been the tournament where Gareth Southgate is, you know, very intent on becoming a world presence in football, but it's not. It's not going to be. And to a certain extent, we don't know what we're going to get yet. But I'm not thoroughly convinced, I have to say. Look, those are a few of our thoughts. So you can always keep in touch with us here at The Offside Rule to let us know what you think as the World Cup progresses. The Offside Rule will be taking a break now until after the World Cup, when you'll no doubt be able to catch up with us for more of our football reflections. But the Athletic Women's Football Podcast runs the whole way through. This week, Matt Davis-Adams sits in for Lindsay, and he's joined by the England and Arsenal centurion Rachel Yankee and the Athletic Charlotte Harper as well. They discuss the Lionesses' form, that win over Japan. Of course, they drew against Norway as well on Wednesday night. And there's also plenty of chat about Everton's Tony Duggan, who's announced her pregnancy. I'm really pleased for Tony. And she's the first British player, anyway, in the WSL, who's entitled to take full paid maternity leave. So, yeah, best wishes to Tony. Let's conclude this show, Lindsay, with a bit of frivolity, shall we? Any other business, this is what it stands for. I'm going to get straight in with the trash talk. A brilliant piece by Nick Miller in The Athletic, where he reviews the best World Cup merchandise. Do you fancy a pair of England underpants?
Not particularly, but what else have you got?
As Nick points out, not something to wear on a first date if you're hoping to get lucky.
Although, the timing of underpants for a tournament in 30 plus degree conditions could be quite good. So instead of, you know, when we've got the beer bellies out, we'll have England underpants.
England underpants, yeah. Perhaps, yeah. Essential merchandise when it's too hot simply to wear any other garments. It also features a t-shirt with Marilyn Monroe. So this is an England t-shirt. It's got Marilyn Monroe on it, posing like she was modelling for, I don't know, a lad's bag back in the day. And she's got a football with her between her thighs. And she's wearing a tight England t-shirt with some red lipstick, which is like every awful cliche. Quite what Marilyn Monroe's got to do with the England football team.
No,
I don't know.
I hope we don't wear that when we're playing USA.
It's hideous. Is what I'm going to say about that one. Plenty of other things as well covered by Nick Miller in that article. We're having a quick chat before the show, Linz, about, on more serious matters, we should say, about Premier League managers that could be replaced during the World Cup.
Well, that's one of the things that I'll certainly be keeping an eye on back at home. I think Frank Lampard, there is certainly rumours starting to surface that this is a period where he could be replaced. So maybe Everton will decide to change their head coach during this tournament. You have to look at Leeds United as well. I know that there were big rumours at the club a few weeks ago, and then Jesse Marsh turned it around somewhat off the back of that Liverpool result, Kate. I wonder, though, whether there are still considerations, because if you're an owner of a football club, and we should look at this, we've had so many departures already. It just feels like there's been too many, to be honest. But you're not very often going to have a period like this where there's a World Cup and you can bed someone else in. You can take your time about the interview process. You're not going to have lots of media either around looking at what you're doing. So I wonder if clubs will start to just make tentative inquiries about people.
The only flip side to that, of course, is if England do make a shock early exit from this World Cup, and I'm not saying at the group stage, I'm probably talking about knockout stage here, that the media focus will quickly then turn to the Premier League and what's happening behind the scenes within a matter of weeks. So we shouldn't just assume that there's going to be a media switch off during this period. The only problem, of course, for any new manager is, yes, it gives them a chance to get used to life behind the scenes, but they've got a very disjointed squad. Players will be coming back at different points depending on when their side exits the tournament. Some players are not going at all. But actually, you know, what might feel like a good idea over the course of a month or so could end up being quite a fractured start for a new manager. Look, we'll keep an eye on that one. This is the last time we're going to speak for another month or so, Linz, on the Offside Rule. Enjoy the tournament. We're going to enjoy covering it and watching it, of course. Big thank you from us to Adrian Artuli from SBS Sport. Great to get that perspective as he leaves to go to Qatar. And Lindsay, you'll be busy with WSL matters, I know, so we can still catch you on the Athletic Women's Football podcast.
You can indeed. Yeah, and I just need to get into that groove of watching four matches a day again, Kate. And still being in the
where
good
are we
going to
get the
home.
Time? It's always it's always weird, isn't it? How you manage to carve out the time, regardless.
I've tried to subtly brace the other half, you know, for the fact that it's coming. But I don't know whether it's going to be well received in this household.
Well, luckily, and that's not just because it's in antisocial Qatar. Times, aren't they? So you'll be absolutely fine plugging in at different times of the day, strange times of the day. Thanks so much. Have you been listening to the Offside Rule? As I said, we'll be back after the World Cup for more of our football meanderings. Do keep a check on what we're up to at Offside Rule Podcast on Twitter and on Instagram, and do head over to the website for some World Cup coverage as well. We'll be going in depth on it, certainly on every England and Wales game. Lindsay, we'll speak to everyone again soon.
Yeah, speak to you in December.
You've been listening to the Offside Rule, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Offside at offsiderulepodcast.com and by following at Offside Rule Pod on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app.
The Athletic.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.